Those of you who are reading the bulletin closely will have worked out that I am not Abigail Young. We're doing pick and mix sermons in this period, clearly. The echoes of the Archbishop's statement are still in our minds, so I just feel like we need a breath or two. Following the reading of the Christmas carol last week, some folks came up to me at the back as people were having refreshments, and not all of this church, and they said that whatever happens, David Giffen should return to Redeemer because we believe in forgiveness and we should practice it here. I do and I don't agree with that, both at the same time. When I knew that the announcement was coming today and that I was preaching, I had to think through what is my story of David Giffen and what is my story around forgiveness. So I'm going to start with David. And this has been very much my impression of him. David, chosen as incumbent for Redeemer. Yes, I thought, digital, energetic, new ideas, skilled with young families, gospel-based, red hair, big smile, infectious good humor. Good choice. I really felt good choice. I then left here and went to the church that he had come from, the Church of the Transfiguration, and I saw a church that he had helped bring back to life, with a strange woven fabric of Catholic, evangelical, LGBTQ and more, serving the communion, classical cello played, guitar and percussion played, outreach, hospitality, growth. The biggest, brightest picture in that church was of his face smiling a welcome to all who walked in. Coming back here to do my second interim here, hopefully my last. David has changed things here with more Catholic and more evangelical edges. He's encouraged people to see ministry as what they're already doing. He empowered people to lead and to act. He had authority and he knew how to get out of the way. David was and is also broken, as many of us are, as his Facebook spoke often. That's my sense of the David I have known. I want to talk about forgiveness. Redeemer has always, in my experience, been averse to confession in liturgy. I like confessions in liturgy. It jolts me in the privacy of public worship to speak aloud words that tag the truth that I fall far short of worthiness to be in the kingdom of heaven. Not confessing at all, or confessing very, very publicly and openly, neither of those pushes you to go to the deep, to the hidden places, the secret corners of your inner life, where the darkness pools and the germs breed and the seeds of evil oh so quietly germinate. Confession comes, and it comes with real spiritual cost. And confession comes before forgiveness happens. And forgiveness isn't cheery. It's not, oh, never mind, forgive, forgive and forget. And it's not simple, oh, come on, we all love you anyway. Jesus, in his resurrection, demonstrated that God returns even to those who would kill him or just stand by as it happened. Jesus in the resurrection returns with the skin of his face and his head and his neck torn by thorns broken with punches. He has holes in his hands and in his feet where great iron spikes were driven through them into wood. His back and sides are torn by whiplashes, and a spear wound big enough to put your fist in comes in through his gut up into his lung. The resurrection is not pretty. The resurrection has no pretense. The resurrection says something ugly, horrible, cruel happened here. Those who cheered, those who hid, those who just watched, those who wept, all remembered. Forgiveness is not about pretense. It is not about amnesia. It is not about cheery optimism. Forgiveness is about truth. Truth told openly. Hidden lies, power misused, lives broken, trust betrayed. To receive forgiveness, we too need to be able to put our finger into the nail holes in the hand, to put our fist into the gashed and torn soft hole, right up, wrist deep to the lung. And Jesus reaches into your torn soul, the rot of guilt, the harrowing of memory and shame, and forgiving heals, but leaves the scars. That's forgiveness. What about now and putting those two together? Now, we will not dismiss David from our memory. We will remember David Giffin in truth. We will remember this ghastly day, the hammerfall of truth and pain each of us feels. We will remember the many months of David's ministry, all of his gifts, his teachings, his love, his brightness and sparkle, his faithfulness and compassion, his challenges to us, and his encouragement to us. We can never, with honesty, reduce a child of God to someone who did nothing wrong or someone who did nothing right. He, like me, gets it right and gets it wrong. Like you, like all of us. David has sinned in such a way that with great sadness and reluctance, the church has taken away his privilege to be a priest. This is a terrible ache. There is also someone not here who also carries a terrible ache, the one who David wronged. So here we are, shocked, blindsided, or unsurprised. Our work now is to learn to practice forgiveness being given, to practice forgiveness being received. Our work is to make confession. Confession made, forgiveness given and received. Today, in our prayers, we need to say of David, God, he is yours. Look after him. Heal him. Heal those close to his heart, his family, who are wounded and hurt. God, we are yours. Look after us. Heal us. Teach us forgiveness. God, listen to my silence and hear my shames and sorrows. Show me your forgiveness. God, hold my hand until by coming to you for cleansing so often, I finally may learn the way and know the path and can let others walk this path in my heart. And David, now he is gone from us. Gather in all that was a blessing in his time with you. Let go of any of the darkness, but not until you have named with truth what you're putting down. Pray for him, pray for his family, pray for his future. Cry for him or be angry with him, but only to let it all flow away. Follow as you have all your Christian life. Follow the pilgrim way, the long walk towards that ugly cross, that place of awful and wonderful resurrection, towards the empty tomb, towards the ascending God. Amen.